Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you, Tim, for the introduction. This is the RTC Weekly Download. Jim Dolan here. I'm looking forward to this particular hour's program because it's going to be a fun one. We're going to have Gerald Moore back again as Philip Marlowe. He's always one of the favorite detectives around here, with a program called The Eager Witness from 1949. And then after that, it's time to laugh with Phil Harris and Alice Faye. You may have heard we're having an election pretty soon. Well, way back in 1948, they had one too. And this is called Homework, a.k.a. Get Out the Vote. But first, the adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or the grave. This started with a man on trial for his life and an A1 citizen eager to testify. But there it was interrupted. And it wasn't until I found a corpse in a bubbling bath, gunplay in the woods, and lots of blackmail that the real eager witness had a chance to talk.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of mystery, comes his most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy as we present The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Eager Witness.
Superior Court of the State of California and for the County of Los Angeles now in session. The Honorable Albert Winston, judge presiding. Everybody rise.
It was the case of the people versus the oft-arrested, never convicted, smooth Earl Jernigan, sometimes bookie, charged in the first degree with a month-old killing of a kindly, gray-haired horse trainer named Kurt Hopper, who had once almost been my client. It was the afternoon of the fourth day of the trial, and the prosecutor for the state had already built an almost airtight case against the alleged gambler when my turn finally came.
To further substantiate the state's claim that Earl Jernigan did willfully and with malice aforethought take the life of the deceased Kurt Hopper. Will Mr. Philip Marlowe take the stand?
Raise your right hand. Promise to tell truth, the whole truth, nothing but truth, help you, God.
I do.
State your name and occupation.
Philip Marlowe, private detective.
Next stand.
Mr. Marlowe, on the morning of the 30th day of July last, the day on which the late Kurt Hopper was murdered, were you hired as a private detective by the said Mr. Hopper?
I was.
And at that time, Mr. Marlowe, did Mr. Hopper state his reason for hiring you?
He did. He wanted me to act as his personal bodyguard on the following day when he planned to drive to San Francisco.
Did he say why he needed a personal bodyguard?
He did. He told me he was afraid for his life, that he refused the gambler's demand that he drug a certain racehorse a week earlier, that gambler had threatened to kill him.
I see. Now, Mr. Marlowe, did Mr. Hopper name that gambler?
Yes, he did.
Who was it?
Earl Jernigan.
Thank you. No further questions, Your Honor.
Counsel for the defense.
Counsel for the defense waives cross-examination, Your Honor.
The witness is excused.
Didn't make sense. No cross-examination. Because from the opening adjective, the counsel for the defense, a dapper item named Calder, who always appeared in French cuffs, gray gabardine, and a cocky, uninviting smile, had raved, ranted, and practically spit at each witness the state had presented. So the courtroom was left with a tingling impression that Earl Jernigan's attorney had something of a surprise waiting up his legal sleeve. Later, when Calder was on his feet and addressing the jury, that something started out fast.
Now that the state has taken the trouble to offer so much circumstantial evidence, so much hearsay, rumor, conjecture, now will I smash all of that with the testimony of one man. One man known to all of you as an outstanding citizen of this city. A prominent real estate broker. An unimpeachable witness eager to testify. Mr. Leonard Gaines.
It worked. Landed in each and every lap like a live grenade and exploded all the way around at once. And when the eminent Mr. Gaines, gray at the temples, maybe 45, and neat in expensive midnight blue flannel with giant stickpin to match, took the stand. And in his own meeting of the board, tone of voice told the court that Earl Jernigan had spent the entire day and night of July 30th last with him at his Malibu Beach home. The prosecuting attorney's jaw dropped to his chest and he stared, dumb.
No time during that day or night did Mr. Jernigan ever leave my home. And as for the hour of the murder, 8 o'clock in the evening, we were having dinner. After that, we played gin rummy until midnight.
Are you sure of that, Mr. Gaines? The hour of your dinner, I mean.
I am positive, Mr. Calder.
No, you can't be. You're lying.
Quiet, quiet in the court.
Order, Miss Harper. Order in the court, please.
No, I won't be quiet. I won't anymore.
Miss Harper, quiet. Order, order. This court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.
Another scotch and soda, mister?
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, wait a minute, baby. I think I'm going to have company.
Mr. Marlowe, can I talk to you for a minute? I'm...
Gail Harper, yeah, I know. What I don't know is why you're not doing 30 days on a rock pile for that rumpus you just kicked up in court. Would you like a soft drink?
No, thanks.
All right, just one, baby.
Jerk. The judge said he understood and left me off with a short lecture, which was what I had counted on.
Oh. You mean all that fireworks in there was planned, not just spontaneous combustion?
That's right. I had to have time. Look, Mr. Marlowe, will you work for me?
Oh, well, now, look,
will
baby.
Will you help me prove that Mr. Leonard Gaines is a liar and that Earl Jernigan did kill my father?
Now, take it easy, Gail. It's a big mouthful, you know.
Mr. Marlowe, listen, please. There isn't much time. We got to prove this tonight or never. By noon tomorrow with the outside, the case will go to the jury.
Okay, what do you want me to do?
Take over where I left off. But first, let's get out of here.
All right. And never mind that drink, miss. Where do we start, honey?
With Leonard Gaines' ex-wife, Debbie Jansen. Here's a snapshot of her. They were divorced about 6 months ago, Mr. Marlowe, and she wasn't very happy about it.
No, huh? Made you figure she was your in?
Yes, and I was right. Mr. Marlowe, it took eavesdropping, bribery, second story work, but I found out plenty.
I'll bet you did. Like what? Oh, hold it, Gail. Light's red.
Like the fact that Debbie and a guy called Eugene Mowry are putting a bite on Gaines for $20,000. Blackmail, Mr. Marlowe, with the payoff scheduled to be made sometime tonight. Right now, she's staying at the Sunland Sulphur Springs Lodge out in the valley. Gaines used to go there once in a while for his arthritis. And the why of the whole business is a letter Gaines once wrote to his ex-wife.
No fooling.
Uh-huh.
Well, tell me, what's that to do with Jernigan's trial and Gaines being a... Oh, it's green now.
I think there's a connection, because yesterday I overheard Debbie tell this Maui something about Gaines' scheduled appearance at the trial today, and... Yeah. Oh, Mr.
Hey, hey! Those jerk California drivers...
The man behind the wheel.
What about him?
That thin face, blonde hair. I've seen him before. I know he was trying to hit one of us.
Oh, fine. Well, that'll keep things from getting dull, won't it?
Then you're gonna help me.
Well, now look, I... who could resist you, baby? Okay, tonight I check in at the lodge at Sunland Sulphur Springs. Come on, let's get out of here. It was 8 o'clock and almost dark when I reached the foothills of the mountain range that separates the San Fernando Valley from L.A. proper and turned off onto a narrow dirt road that ran through a twisting gorge past a moon-faced watchman who asked no questions as he slowly opened a sagging wooden gate faintly labeled Sunland Sulphur Springs, where Mother Nature's remedies bubbled from the earth private. It was another 5 minutes along the same dirt road uphill and through thick foliage before I was at a parking space out of my car and walking the last quarter of a mile toward the lodge itself that was spotted with widely separated cottages, also sagging, and each tagged Casa, and followed by something Spanish and hard to pronounce. Inside the place was cheap porch furniture and occasional threadbare rugs over scarred pine and deserted, except for a sleepy old guy with thick-lidded eyes and an accordion wrinkled face who was slouched in a heap behind a sign on the reservation desk. That read Maynard Sharp, no less, night manager. When I gave him my name and said that both my rheumatism and I needed a rest, he came too, almost.
Roomy, Mr. Marlowe. Well, let's see. Can let you have most any one of the cottages. Half of them are empty. Things kind of slow this time of year.
How slow can you get?
You'd be surprised. How's about Casa Francisco de Leon?
Casa Francisco, hmm? Yeah, that'll be fine, Mr. Sharp.
All righty, sir. Now, if you'll just sign the register here, I'll get your key. But,
as I signed my name, I checked the guest list quickly. And the next second found what I wanted. Deborah Jansen. And next to that, and in a different hand, her cottage for the night. Casa Rolando de... Baron Dido. That's close enough. Well, anyway, it was all I needed. I took the key from Mr. Sharp, a misnomer if ever you heard one, learned the location of my quarters, paid him in advance, and left.
Thanks, sir.
Outside, I turned to my right, past a large open bath that smelled like rotten eggs and talked to itself like a junior Vesuvius, as more warm sulfur waters, equally unpleasant to smell, bubbled from a pipe in the center. Beyond that was the first cottage, another casa I couldn't pronounce, and it stayed like that all the way down the line, until I reached the second one that showed light. It was the casa known as Rolando de Barandido. And when I moved closer and around to a window that was screen only, I knew that my client had done her eavesdropping well, because in the center of the room and putting on her coat was the ex-wife named Debbie, and standing nearby and holding on tight to the cigarette in his hand like it was support, was what had to be the boyfriend, Eugene Mowry.
You're sure that Gaines will go through with this all right?
For the 100th time, Eugene, yes, I'm positive. Can't you understand? He has to. Besides, $20,000 won't break him. It won't more than bend him a bit. Now, stop worrying.
But I can't. Debbie, why must you go alone? Now, why can't I go with you?
Eugene, please, we've been over that. I told Leonard that I'd meet him in town at the Beverly Crest Hotel at 10 and alone. He agreed to also be alone. Except for the money.
Debbie, you do handle things well. Come here, darling. The kiss for your brilliance.
Oh, please, Eugene, there isn't time.
Oh, what's the matter? Are my kisses losing their flavor at this point?
Don't be a fool. Look, it's late, Eugene. It's after 9 already. I've got to hurry. Now, go on. Go on, be a good boy and leave now. We shouldn't even be seen together tonight.
Well, why not, Debbie?
It's not smart. Here. Meet me at the tulip room, darling, at 11 as we planned. Then, Eugene, we'll have time and reason to relax. $20,000 worth of reason.
As Mowry oozed toward the door, I slid away from the cottage and into the shadow of a clump of trees nearby. Stayed there as he walked out of sight down the road that led back to the parking space. Then a few minutes later, when Debbie clicked off the light and left, I moved out of hiding and started slowly after her at a safe distance. Until from someplace in the night, an ugly, snub-nosed automatic that belonged to someone blonde and thin-faced as a near automobile accident stopped me cold.
Where you going, Jack?
For air. I love to walk in the country at night, okay?
I wouldn't know, Jack. I'm a city boy myself, but as long as that's what you want, it's Jake with me. As long as it's where it's good and dark. Now, go on. That way. Move. Jack, that's far enough. Hold it. Turn around and face me.
Why, so I can watch you pull the trigger?
Never mind why, just turn.
Okay, turn it is.
That's better. Now, one step closer.
One step closer.
Hey, what's that?
Not pleasant, my friend, taking wing. Now, before I beat you in little pieces, let's have it. Who are you? Who do you work for and what do you want with me? Come on, gunman, talk.
Okay. Okay, no more. My name's Langley. Work for Earl Jernigan.
Oh?
Yeah, I've been watching you ever since the trial started. Jernigan didn't want you moving in, hon.
Which is why you tried to pick me off with a car when I was with Gail Harper this afternoon, huh? Come on!
Yeah, that's why. Now, what are you going to do with me?
The time being, Buster, leave you as is. Flat on your back, because I've still got to catch up with a lady before she reads a letter! City boy.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, because of the sharp rise in America's birth rate during the war, we face a very serious educational crisis. Many communities will find that their schools lack sufficient teachers, classrooms, and facilities. Citizens must get together and work for better schools, more teachers. If we want all of our children to have a chance for a good education, we must take action now. Now, with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Eager Witness. It was strictly hit and run. I piled Langley into the manzanita and didn't even wait to see him bounce. Instead, I took off through a gully that was a shortcut to my car, because I knew the Jernigan's watchdog had nothing to offer compared with the hot-headed Debbie Jansen, who at the moment, no doubt, was well on her way to the Beverly Crest Hotel and a blackmail rendezvous that was a cinch to wind up in the final destruction of the letter. That was my theory, but I dropped it like a hot rock just as I crossed the path to the sulfur pool.
Mr. Marlowe! Mr. Marlowe! Somebody screamed! He's there by the spring! Oh, gosh! Oh, my gosh. Sure had to happen to me.
It was nothing but sulfur fumes and the thick gurgle of the springs until Sharp played his flashlight over the pool. Then we saw.
Oh, my gosh.
And the water that was turning red from blood oozing around the knife in her back.
Look, it's Miss Jansen.
Come on, Pop, give me a hand. Let's get her out of there. Come on. Take it easy now. Take it easy. That's it. Debbie.
I never should have tried it.
Tried what? Who was it, Debbie? Who did this?
He got the letter.
Who? Who got the letter, Debbie? Debbie.
Marlo, did she pass out?
For good, man. She's dead.
She seemed to be mumbling something about a letter. Did you get what it was?
Yeah, only part of it. A killer apparently took the letter away from her. Believe me, that's bad.
Letter? What's a letter?
Wait a minute. Huh? Oh, it's probably that pheasant again.
Letters? What are you talking about,
Oh,
son?
I guess I'm just getting jumpy. Hey, there is somebody. Come on, Pop.
Sounds like he's over there, Marlowe.
Yeah, I can hear him.
Oh, no, that ain't going to do you any good, son. Not in that brush, it ain't. And what's more, I wouldn't go any further if I was you.
But Pop, all he needs is 10 seconds and he can destroy that letter for good.
Well, just the same, there's a million and one places a killer can hide in there and lay for you, son.
Yeah. Yeah, Pop, well, it's the moment it's a stalemate. I'd sure love to find out who that snake in the bush is.
You know, I've run a peaceful place up until it's getting to be like one of them there movies. Only thing left out is a posse.
Yeah, you're so right. Murders in the night, lost letters. It's corny enough without a posse.
Yeah, and might dangerous, too.
Hmm? Yeah, I see what you mean.
Are you ready to...
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah, I'll lead you back to the office. By Jasper, I don't understand this one bit. Miss Jansen is stabbed to death over that letter, and in her dying...
Hey.
Huh? What is it?
Shh. Up ahead there. What? Somebody ducked behind that big tree. Keep the chatter going, man. Walk on up the path. Don't let him know we spotted him. Go on, talk.
Okay, sure. I was saying, I don't understand. Well, our place here is generally as quiet as a tomb.
As the old man grimly ad-libbed his way up the path, I followed a few feet behind. When he got even with the tree, I turned suddenly, took 3 fast steps, and grabbed! Come here, you!
Hang on to him!
Well. Mr. Leonard Gaines, the unimpeachable citizen himself. Stand still, Gaines.
A gun. What's the idea, Marlowe?
Try running and it'll come to you. I suppose you've got a legitimate reason for being here all thought up?
I'm here because I've got a touch of arthritis. I need a treatment and night's rest.
Arthritis isn't all you're going to have if I find what I think I'm going to find in your pockets. Empty them, Buster.
I said empty them. All right, I'll empty them.
That's better.
Sharp, you're a witness, and I demand that you...
Just a minute, Mr. Gaines. You're in a pretty bad spot to demand anything.
There's our baby. There's the letter we've been looking for. Pick it up, Gaines. Pick it up and read it.
Now see here, Marlowe.
See there, Gaines. Read it while you're able to.
Yeah. My dear Debbie, if I didn't know you so well, I'd resent your stupid accusations. Now, look, Mark.
Read it!
We've already made our property settlement, as you're well aware, and you'll be a long time finding a court that says otherwise. Now you know where you can go, so why not get started as ever, Leonard?
Oh, fine. That's about as incriminating as a lecture on the family meat bill. Sharp, whose jurisdiction are we under here?
County Sheriff's Office.
All right, call him. Also, call your man out on the highway and have him lock that main gate.
Main gate?
Yeah.
Say, now that's a good idea. I'll do it right now.
Now, wait a minute. Have you got a gun?
Yep, got a rifle. Been in the family for years.
Can you use it?
Well, yeah, I reckon I can. Where are you going?
Out to round up Langley. He'd be pushing hard to give his boss, a star witness here, a big helping hand. I want to be in shape to push back. And remember, Pop, keep your eye on Gaines and not on the phone when you make those calls. I'll see you. The second time that night, I started down the hill and toward the car lot, keeping in the shadows and moving slowly this time. Because it was odds on that Langley had taken everything in. And I knew that he'd try to part my hair with a gun barrel and pull Leonard Gaines out of the jam he was in the very first chance he had. So I stayed off the paths long enough to have both socks full of burrs when it happened. But not what I expected. It was the Sharp family blunderbuss that had exploded with a blast like a small howitzer. So also for the second time, I turned and ran back up the hill, this time to the office. I got there just as Maynard, climbing hand over hand up a smoking rifle barrel, made it to his feet. Maynard, what happened? Where's Gaines?
Well, I don't know. He got away, I guess.
Well, the shot, what about that?
It went up there, through the roof.
Oh, fine.
Well, gosh, I didn't suspect a thing. He just said he wanted to smoke.
But he didn't happen to have a match, I know. So you hung your rifle over your arm, stuck both hands in your pockets to find one for him, and that's when he took you.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Well, how'd you know?
Never mind, Pop.
Well, I made a grab for him, though. Ripped his coat about halfway off.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Well, I'm sure sorry he got away, Mark.
All right, don't worry about it, will you? Can't get far with the gate locked.
Well, I got bad news there, too. Oh, the gate's locked all right. But there's a back road.
There's a back what?
Back road.
Road, yeah, well,
right. Yeah. It ain't much. It's rough and rocky, but it's passable. And anybody's been up here as often as Mr. Gaines has, sure know about it.
Oh, great. Look, Pop, can't you understand that there was a murder committed here tonight and we had the murderer and no buts? Fell for the oldest gag in the world.
But
I was a sucker to turn him over to you. And will you stop waving that envelope?
I just think you ought to see this.
All right, what is it? Where'd you get all that loot?
Gaines dropped it when I ripped his crotch.
$20,000, it says here on the wrapper. Something else written here, too. Casa Rolando de Barandido, a 10. Casa Rolando. Pop, that's it. That's the answer. Come on, we got to get down that back road in a hurry. Sharp at the wheel of the pickup truck, we bounced over the pair of sometimes parallel ruts studded with stones the size of bowling balls. It was called a back road. The better part of 2 miles before he cut lights and motor and whispered that if Gaines was going to get stuck at all, it was sure to happen in a dry wash just around the next bend. I told him to wait and went ahead on foot. He was right. Gaines was stuck in more ways than one. His car was up to its hubcaps in sand and his wallet up to its stamp compartment in blackmail, conducted by his ex-wife's murderer with the same leather she'd had, the letter. It was Eugene Murray, and clenched in his hand was a tattered white envelope, nothing more.
I'll make it easy for you.
I held my .38 in close to my side and edged up behind them.
$20,000.
Now, Murray, I don't have that much.
You'll lie. You're going to pay her that. I don't know. I know because we worked the deal out together. Only she got greedy. Tried to double-cross me and pull it alone.
So you killed her?
Yes, I didn't intend to, but when I found out that she tricked me, I was furious. The first thing that I knew, I'd stabbed her. Yeah, that's enough of that. Just give me the money. You've nothing to worry about.
Now, listen, Mowry,
You listen, Gaines. You're in no position to bargain. It's better than having your $200,000 gambling debt exposed and your reputation ruined, isn't it? Or facing the trigger man, Langley, if you refuse to alibi for Jernigan, isn't it? Or bucking a perjury charge if you do alibi? No. You've got yourself in a corner, Gaines. So pay off. Only $20,000.
But I tell you, Mowry, I don't have it.
You're lying again.
No, he isn't. Don't move, either one of you. Leave your hands where they are. I got the $20,000 right here, and it's pretty well earmarked as blackmail payment already. But just to round things out, Mowry, I'll take that envelope you've got there.
This? Well, what do you want this for?
Funny man. because it's no doubt postmarked with an hour, a date, and a location, which together with Brother Gaines' own handwriting places him out of town on July 30th, a time he swears he was at his Malibu home all day with Jernigan. Right, Gaines?
Smart boy, aren't you, Marlowe?
You still got a chance, Gaines. You better gamble with me. You've got nothing to lose now.
I'm with you.
Stand still, Buster, or help me out.
Now, Gaines, go!
Oh! Oh, my leg!
Were you thinking of going someplace, Mr. Gaines?
No. No, I'm not going anyplace, Mr. Marlowe.
Well, Gail, the big show's about to start. Court will be in session in a few minutes.
I know. And different from yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, you did a swell job, Mr. Marlowe. Gee, I don't know how to thank you.
Save it, baby. If that scale Lady Justice holds in her hands is in better balance today, it was your hunch and old Maynard's blunderbuss that did as much to put it there as my running around through the brush at Sulphur Springs.
But all I knew was that Gaines was lying. I didn't know it was as complicated as it was.
Well, that's because Debbie Jensen was twice as treacherous as we figured.
I still don't understand. How did you know that Eugene Mowry had killed Debbie?
Well, you see, baby, I overheard her tell Mowry that she was going to meet Gaines in the Beverly Crest Hotel at 10 for the payoff.
Uh-huh.
But I figured that was a lie strictly for Maury's benefit when Pop gave me the packet of money Gaines had dropped. It had that complicated name of a cabin and the time of the appointment, which was also 10, written on it.
Mm.
So I knew the real meeting was scheduled to take place out there. See?
Oh, I see. Then she was going to send Mowry off to the Beverly Crest while she collected the money at Sulphur Springs and then beat it alone.
That's it, honey. You see, if her cabin had been named something simple like Number 4, then Gaines could have remembered it instead of that Casa Robino del Bangadoro, whatever it was. He had to write down, you see? Well, then things might have been different.
Ah, oh, you'd have found a way. After all, you figured out it was the postmark that was important.
Only after I'd been slapped in the face by a perfectly harmless letter with no envelope. Had to be the postmark. What else?
Oh, they're starting.
Yeah.
Good luck, Mr. Marlowe. Give them the works.
Don't worry, baby. I'm the eager witness today. We're going to knock them dead. Literally. They got it coming. I watched Jernigan's face as the preliminaries got underway. The killer was beaten. When the court finally settled down to work and the prosecutor took over, I listened to his deft buildup as he primed the jury and the dramatic ringmaster voice he used when he called.
Will Philip Marlowe take the stand, please? Now, Mr. Marlowe, you told us yesterday that you are a private investigator. Now will you tell the court in your own words what happened to you last night?
I sat there looking into the cold, baleful eyes of the prosecutor and thought of a paraphrase on that wonderful quote from Oliver Wendell Holmes. It's not enough to ask for justice. One must also hope for mercy.
Mr. Marlowe.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Well, it began here in this room yesterday afternoon at about 3:30 when the counsel for defense called a witness, a Mr. Leonard Gaines, to the stand.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman McDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Joy Terry, John Daner, Michael Ann Barrett, Junius Matthews, Ben Wright, Lou Krugman, Larry Dobkin, and Bud Whittem. The special music is by Richard Orunt. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
The trail started in Montana with a bum with two names rushing away from his lady love and led fast into L.A. past a southerner from Canada, a worried wool dealer and a chorus girl with a 45. When it finally stopped at Murder in the Park, the tramp was still in a hurry.
You and I have a friend coming to call next Monday night. She's my friend Irma. If this beautiful, lovable, but dumb blonde isn't your friend now, she will be the moment you hear her over most of these same CBS network stations next Monday following the Lux Radio Theater. My friend Irma will bring you plenty of laughs and great entertainment. So be sure to make friends with My Friend Irma these Monday nights on CBS, where you'll hear them all this fall. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where Arthur Godfrey's talent scouts are heard Mondays, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's our noir detective supreme, Philip Marlowe, in The Eager Witness from 1949. Now we go 1 year back, 1948. This is October 31st, 1948, to be exact. And the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, they're all about an election coming up. This is called Homework.
Good health to all from Rexall. Yes, it's Sunday, time for the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, presented by the makers of Rexall Drug Products and your Rexall Family Druggist.
Good evening. This is your Rexall Family Druggist, taking a little time from behind the prescription counter this Sunday evening to speak for all 10,000 of us. The 10,000 druggists who have added the word Rexall to our own store names. You can always tell us by the orange and blue Rexall sign in our windows. The sign means that we carry the 2,000 or more drug products made by the Rexall Drug Company. They range all the way from aspirin to penicillin, and they're as fine and pure and dependable as science can make them. We recommend them to our customers because we know you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. And now your Rexall Family Druggist brings you the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Scharf and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. It is 4 o'clock in the Harris household, and the children have just arrived home from school. They're an hour late, and Phil and Alice are a little upset.
Well, it's about time you children got home. Where have you been?
Yeah, why were you so late?
The teacher kept us after school, Daddy.
Yeah, she said the homework we did last night was all wrong.
So? My children can't grasp the simple things they teach in the elementary grades. The trouble is, you don't pay no attention. You think you know everything. You won't listen to your elders. Now, after this, if you have any trouble, come to me with your homework.
That's what we did last night, Dad.
Oh. And what makes your teacher so sure it was wrong?
She said George Washington was the first president, not Petrillo.
Well, that's a moot point.
Daddy, the teacher gave us these pamphlets for you to read.
Let me see them, children. These might help you, Phil. Political history of our country, current issues of the political campaign, party platforms.
Hold it, Myrtle, hold it. Just... Just take it easy. You might not know it, but I don't have to read pamphlets to know what's going on in this country. I'm right up to the minute on world affairs and current events, like every good American citizen should be.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, because there's something I forgot to tell you. The election committee called, and they want us to help out at the election on Tuesday.
Election?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's running for something?
We're voting for a president. They want me to work at the polls, and they want you to go around the neighborhood and get the people to vote.
Oh, but Alice, I can't be bothered with that stuff. Let somebody else do
it. Oh, Phil, that's not the right attitude. This is an important election.
That's right, Daddy. The teacher says it's the duty of everyone to do their part.
Please do it, Daddy. We'll be proud of you. You'll be running the election and helping to pick the president.
Yes, Phyllis, but I can... Running the election, huh? I'll be picking a president, huh? Well, if it's up to me to pick them, we don't need no election. We'll call the whole thing off. I'll make big changes.
Phil.
Yes, big changes. I'll make a clean sweep of the whole country.
I'll be... Phil, stop swinging your arms. If anybody came in and...
Yes,
back
sir,
you...
I'll sweep everything.
Phil, look what you did.
Oh, well, gee, I didn't know that anybody was in back of me.
It's my brother William. You knocked him out.
Oh. As I was saying, I'll sweep everybody.
Phil, don't let him lie there. Help him up.
Okay, okay.
How is he, Phil? How is he? Is he unconscious?
With Willie, it's hard to tell. Yeah, he's out all right, honey, but I'll bring him to.
Well, hurry, Phil. Rub his wrist. Slap his face. Not with your fist.
Come on, Willie. Willie, come on, snap out of it. Willie, come on, snap... I'm sorry it happened. I didn't even know you were there, and I... Well, Willie, say something, Willie. Speak to me.
Good morning, Philip.
For that, I had to bring him, too.
I'm glad you're all right, Willie. It was an accident.
I don't believe it. I think he did it on purpose.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Phil would never hit you on purpose, would you, Phil?
Nah.
He was just carried away with himself when I told him about his being appointed to the election committee.
Yes, sir, and they showed great judgment. Who could do a better job of getting those women out to vote? Why, I'll have them dames eaten out of my hand. All I got to do is call at their homes, turn on that Harris charm, and I'll have all
hold
them women
it,
coming
Buster. To... Hold it, Buster! Hold
Philip, frankly, I don't think the committee made a very wise choice. The importance of voting in this election should be explained to the people, and I don't think you're capable of doing it. I doubt if you even know who's running.
I don't know who's... Oh, Oglethorpe. Homer J. Oglethorpe, please. Go buy yourself a new snuff box.
Well, if you know, answer me. Who is running?
Oh, you don't know, huh?
Well, of course I know. Among the candidates, Thomas E. Dewey, Harry Truman, Henry Wallace, Norman Thomas, and J. Strom Thurmond.
But of course.
I hope you know, Phil. I didn't want to tell you, but several of the committee members questioned your ability to do the job. In fact, a few of them are coming over this evening.
They questioned my ability. My ability. Well. This is the sort of a thing that... cuts a man to the quick.
Phil, they're just coming over to find out if you're capable of handling it. You have to have a knowledge of politics in case people ask questions.
Let them ask questions. Let them ask questions. Let them interrogate me.
What was that last word?
Me. Yeah, me. Me. I can explain to those people the importance of voting this year. It's the political issues involved which concern I'll get it. Glad that bell rang. I really don't know too much about this. There must be some way I can find out before election. Hi, Curly. Frankie. Hey, what do you know about politics?
Everything. I probably know as much about politics as I do about music.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Not if there's anything you want to know, just ask me.
I'll take a chance. Now look, who are you voting for in the presidential election?
I ain't voting. I don't believe in changing presidents.
Well, some people think we should.
Well, that's because they haven't followed the career of our president as closely as I have. I say the man's doing a good job. And as long as he continues to do a good job, let's keep Hoover there.
Frankie.
Yes?
Mr. Truman is the president of the United States, not Hoover. Oh, of course. I was thinking of Canada. Now, is there anything else you want to know?
Yeah, have you seen a doctor about that slow leak in your head?
Look, Remley, I'm on the election committee, and they're coming over tonight to find out what I know about the different parties.
Curly, your education's been sadly neglected. Didn't you learn anything in school? First thing they taught me was that there are two major parties, the Whigs and the Tories.
Those two I know about.
There's more?
Well, there must be. There are a lot of other fellas running this year. There's Harry Truman, Thomas E. Dewey, Henry Wallace, J. Strom Thurman, and Thomas.
Thomas?
John Charles. Look, Remley, you know even less than I do about this, and it's our duty to find out about it. I hope you realize the importance of voting.
Well, of course I do. Look at my poor father. One year he didn't vote, and they passed prohibition.
And what's wrong with prohibition? I mean, worse things than that can happen. Like having an atom bomb go off in your hand or something. I mean, after all, Remley, you don't know anything. Don't you know anybody that I can talk to who knows politics?
Well, why do you have to know about it?
Well, because we have to know what we're doing when we vote. If we pick the wrong guy, we can get into as much trouble as people did when they had that Nebuchadnezzar.
What was wrong with him? Well, besides his name.
What was wrong with him?
Oh, Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon. There was three children from the land of Israel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. They took a little trip to the land of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. We took a lot of gold and made him an idol, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
And he told everybody when you hear the music of the cornet
and the flute
and the horn,
you must fall down and worship that idol, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. But the children of Israel would not bow down, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. You couldn't fool them with a golden idol,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
I said you couldn't fool them with a golden idol,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
So the king put the children in the fire furnace,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Then he heaped on the coals and the red-hot brimstone,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Seven times hotter, hotter than it ought to be,
Shadrach,
Shadrach.
He burned up the soldiers the king had put there,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
But the Lord sent an angel with snowy white wings down in the middle of that furnace, talking to the children about the power of the gospel,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Well, they couldn't even burn a hair on the head of that Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, laughing and talking while the fire was a-jumping,
Shadrach.
The Lord was on their side. Old Nebuchadnezzar called, "Hey there," when he saw the power of the Lord. And they had a big time in the house of Babylon, Shadrach,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Hey, Curly, I've been thinking. Why do you have to ask somebody about politics? Books have been written on the subject. You must have one in the house.
Yeah, we must have. Hey, Let's look at my book collection and see.
Your book collection?
Naturally. I have quite an extensive library.
Mm-hmm.
There they are. Go ahead, look for yourself.
Oh. Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Emerson's Essays. Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. Masochistic Tendencies of the Malayan.
That one was excellent. A smasher.
You liked it, huh?
Well, that and Homer's Iliad, I just couldn't put them down. I suggest you read it, Mr. Remley.
Yes, maybe I would.
No.
I'll wait till I make the picture. See what else you got here. The architectural influence of the Elizabethan era. The Rover boys at Tehachapi.
Curly! Alice, she goes for that light, frothy stuff.
Of course. Here's a book that'll help us, Curly. The Machination of Political Regimes During the Industrial Revolution.
Ideal for our purpose, Mr. Remley.
Right.
Now, let's see. Hey, Remley.
What?
We'll never understand this. The words are too big and complicated
Phil,
for us.
Phil, but... Oh, hello, Frank.
Hi, Alice.
Hey, Alice. I've been thinking about it, and, hey, maybe I shouldn't serve on that committee.
Yeah, but, Phil, I think you should. It's important to call at people's homes and get them out to vote.
I know that, but they're going to ask me questions, and if I can't answer them, they won't even let me in their home.
Hey, Curly, I got an idea. Why don't you practice on Alice and me? Pretend we're a married couple and you're trying to get us to vote.
Okay, Remley, Wait a minute. You and Alice are married?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
Don't be a child. We're only playing house. Go on now, you go to the door and ring the bell.
All right, I'll try it.
Okay, Alice. Now we'll make like we're a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
You put your head on my shoulder.
All right.
I'll put my arm around you like
mm-hmm.
this.
Uh-huh.
Is it comfy, dear?
Yes, darling.
Wait! We ain't gonna do it that way, Remley.
Please, don't tell me how to play house. Go on, you go outside and ring the bell and I'll let you in.
And let me in fast, brother. I don't want no pause between me and the bell ring. And the door opening. Let's make it all work fast, all right? All right, but see till you get the door open. I'm going to try. No lows, Dad. No lows.
Look, Alice. We got to make it tough for Curly.
Yeah.
We'll pretend we're not interested in voting, and it's up to him to convince us that we should.
Miss Fay, I brought your groceries in the kitchen.
Oh, thanks, Julius.
Hi, Mr. Remley. Where's Mr. Harris?
All right, beat it, kid. We're busy. Go on, scram. Scram.
Stop pushing, Mac. I'll go. I ain't overjoyed at the prospect of your company anyway.
Someone's at the door, darling.
Well, answer it, sweetie pie.
Bing. Go away, will you? I'm talking to Alice. There's someone at the door, Angel.
I'll get it, honey.
Let's get it together, sweetheart.
Angel? Honey? Sweetheart? This is certainly a nauseating situation. I'd better sneak up and find out what's going on.
I'll open the door, dearest.
Careful of your itty-bitty hands, Cookie Pie.
I don't know which is more nauseating, the situation or the dialogue. Coming.
Hello.
Uh-oh, it's Mr. Harris. Now the fireworks start.
Madam, my name is Phil Harris.
Does he have to introduce himself every time he comes home?
I'd like to talk to you, lady. May I come in?
Oh, not now. I'm very busy. Come back some other time.
Well, if I can't talk to you, may I talk to your husband?
He's got to ask her if it's all right to talk to himself.
I'm sorry, but my husband is busy
and somebody at the door, darling?
Oh.
Well, and who is this?
How can he act so innocent?
Oh, this is Mr. Harris, darling.
Oh?
Mr. Harris, I'm Mrs. Harris. And this is my husband, Mr. Remley.
I guess I just don't understand these Hollywood marriages.
Well, what's on your mind, Harris?
Well, there's something I got to talk to you two about. There's something I must know.
Uh-oh, here's where the shooting starts.
What do you want to know?
Are you two voting next Tuesday?
Now, there's a shrewd question. No more of this. Mr. Harris, can't you see what's going on here?
Oh, Julius, what are you doing in here?
He delivered the groceries. Oh. We thought he left.
Oh. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Mr. Remley. Calling Miss Faye cookie pie right in front of poor Mr. Harris.
Hey. Hey, what do you know? The kid's sticking up for me.
Sure, I'm sticking up for you. I can't let your wife do this to you just because you're a poor, broken-down old musician who ain't got enough...
Never mind. Get off my side. Now, beat it, will you, kid? Go on back to the grocery.
Okay,
get
okay.
out of it. All right. Darn, kid spoiled the whole thing. Now we don't even... Oh. Well, I wasn't doing too well anyway.
Phil, it might help you if you read those pamphlets the children brought home from school. They explain the candidates, their platforms, and how the government is run in a very simple language.
Yeah, the pamphlets. Hey, come on, Frankie. We got just time to read them things before the committee gets here. Come on. See you later, honey.
See, it's nice to see Phil take an interest in the election. Maybe he'll find out a few things about our country. It's a big place, and there's a lot to learn, such as... Copper comes from Arizona, peaches come from Georgia, and lobsters come from Maine. The wheat fields are the sweet fields of Nebraska, and Kansas gets bonanzas from the grain. Old whiskey comes from old Kentucky. Ain't the country lucky? New Jersey gives us glue. And you come from Rhode Island, and little old Rhode Island is famous for you. Cotton comes from Louisiana, gophers from Montana, and spuds from Idaho.
They plow lands in the cowlands of Missouri,
where most beef, men for roast beef, seems to grow.
Grand Canyons come from Colorado, gold comes from Nevada.
Yes, and divorces also do. And you come from Rhode Island, and little old Rhode Island is famous for you.
Pencils come from Pennsylvania, best from West Virginia, and tents from Tennessee.
They know mink where they grow mink in Wyoming.
A camp chair in New Hampshire, that's for me.
And did you know that a minnow?
Yes.
Comes from Minnesota. A coat's come from Dakota. But why should you be blue?
You come from Rhode Island. Don't let them rise, Rhode Island. She's famous for you.
Hey, Frankie, did you finish reading all the pamphlets?
Yeah.
Pretty interesting, aren't they?
If you say so.
Well, they are. According to these pamphlets, almost any kid in this country has a chance to grow up and be president.
Not having any kids, I ain't interested.
But supposing you did. Just picture it, Frankie. Someday you get married, and after a year or two, the stork comes to your house, and who knows? The little one might grow up to be president. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah. Well, I'm the only stork that ever grew up to be president.
Look, Curly, forget my kid and think about your committee. They'll be here soon. Now, can you memorize everything you read?
Well, I hope so. There's an awful lot to remember, though.
All right, I'll brief you. First, our form of government is divided into three branches, legislative, executive, and judiciary. You know all the candidates and their different platforms, and of course you know that we don't elect our president through popular vote.
We send members to the Electoral College who in turn elect a president. You follow me?
Yeah, I got most of it. Well, what was that stuff after you said, I'll brief you?
I'll tell you once more. The government is the...
Wait a minute, too late, Frankie. Now, there's the committee.
Oh.
I think I'll remember everything if they'll just start asking questions fast before I forget.
Well, don't wait. Start talking politics as soon as they can.
I will.
Phil, the committee is here. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Kerwin, this is my husband, Mr. Harris.
How do you do, Mr. Harris?
How are you, sir?
Our government is divided into three branches. The legislative, the executive, and the judiciary.
How am I doing with my answers, Alice?
Not bad, considering I haven't asked you any questions yet. Won't you be seated, gentlemen?
Thank you, but we can't stay long. Now, Mr. Harris, we're merely here to find out if you're familiar with election procedure.
We know you are, but some voters might ask silly questions like, how is a president elected?
Well, that I know. Now, the president is not elected by popular vote. Instead, we vote to send members to an electrical college. And after they graduate from college, they vote for us, and that's why it takes 4 years to elect the president.
Yes. That's a very keen analysis.
Yeah, isn't it? Mr. Harris has a great brain. Someday we hope to find out who graded it.
Mr. Harris, do you know anything at all about politics? Do you know who you're going to vote for yourself?
Naturally. I've made up my mind, and I know exactly who I'm going to vote for.
Well, off the record, I hope you're voting for Mr. Truman.
Of course. Who else?
I think Mr. Dewey is the better man.
That's what I said. Mr. Dewey, by all means.
Of course, there are people who like Mr. Thurman.
And I'm one of those people.
How do you feel about Lassie?
You couldn't find a better man to cut that out.
Mr. Harris, according to you, you're voting for three men. Do you think we should have three presidents at the same time?
Why not? While one is joining Indian tribes and the second one is out fishing, the third one can stay at the White House and get some work done.
Mr. Johnson, I think we've heard enough. Shall we go?
Yes. Mr. Harris, I don't think you're the man for the election committee. Unfortunately, we can't prevent you from voting yourself, but we... We can keep you from lousing up everybody else. Good night, sir.
Oh, but gentlemen, Mr. Harris...
Good night, Mrs. Harris. You have our deepest sympathy.
Phil, you didn't know what you were talking about at all.
Well, I was trying to...
Being on the committee isn't too important, but before you vote, I wish you'd find out more about the candidate.
You're right, Alice. You're absolutely right. And I'll admit I don't know too much about them, and that it's our duty, and it's the duty of everyone, to vote intelligently on Tuesday. I'm going to start reading up on the candidates right now.
Oh, me too. I didn't realize it before, but now I know it's important to pick the right man.
Well, come on, Frankie. Let's study these facts. Now, this explains the platforms of Mr. Truman, Mr. Dewey, Mr. Wallace, Mr. Thurman, and Mr. Frankie, what are you doing?
Well, I'm choosing the man I'm going to vote for.
Well, how are you doing it?
I'm putting all the names in a hat, and I'm going to pick one.
Oh, Remley, you can't do it that way.
It's too late. I already picked a name out. Here it is. I'm voting for... It's funny, I didn't even put this one in.
Who is it?
Some guy named Stetson.
You picked out the lady. Remley, sit down. We're going to read this book right now.
Phil and Alice will be back in just a moment.
Pardon me, mister, but where can I find a Rexall drugstore?
Well, they're all over the country, my friend. 10,000 of them. Most of them independent family druggists like me.
But you can always tell them by the orange and blue Rexall sign in the window.
And that sign means they sell Rexall drug products?
Exactly. More than 2,000 of them. Yes, we Rexall druggists may disagree about politics and football teams, but there's one thing we're really sold on.
I know. Rexall drug products.
Right, my friend. You see, we druggists know that Rexall products are carefully and purely compounded, that they're tested over and over again, and that they're constantly being improved by the never-ending research that goes on in Rexall's big laboratories. So when our customers ask us to recommend the brand, we just naturally tell them
you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Now, how did you know that?
Because I found it out for myself. Why do you think I was looking for a Rexall drugstore in the first place?
See you next Sunday, folks.
Good night now for the makers of Rexall drug products and your Rexall family druggist. Look for the blue and orange sign in their windows. It means they carry the 2,000 or more Rexall drug products. And these 10,000 family druggists tell you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall. This is Bill Foreman wishing good health to all from Rexall. Sunday is fun day on NBC. Stay tuned to this station for the Edgar Burke and Charlie McCarthy Show, which follows immediately.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.